gather round, friends, lend an ear. Stead Talks Podcast, the story is clear. From humble beginnings to the mic we steer. An origin tale, we spin it right here. We got slick mics and headphones at the ready. The room's buzzing with tales so heady. Welcome tonight to Stead Talk Sound. Big bands playing, we're breaking new ground. Settle in, get cozy, and let your mind unravel. Cause we're diving deep into our very own travel. From a spark to a flame, the Stead Talk was born. Through trials and laughs, our narrative sworn.
So where do you find a partner who will sell everything, buy a travel trailer, get some land, and move off into the middle of the woods all in under a month? A lot of people want to know that. And wish I could give you an easy answer, but I could tell you how we did it. And on today's inaugural episode of the Stead Talks podcast, that's exactly what we're going to cover.
So I'd just like to start out by saying that today's podcast is brought to you by chocolate chip sourdough bread, which is pretty amazing. And, well, we hope. We're going to try it. But I can't imagine that sourdough bread with chocolate chips in it wouldn't be good.
Right?
Yeah. So, I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about that, too.
Super excited about that. But so I think what I wanted to do was talk a little bit about a question I get asked all the time, right? Which is, how does one go from being a flatlander, a city folk, to doing what we do here? And it's kind of a wild story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worthy of a podcast episode.
I think so.
Yeah. So I figure that's what we'll do. I mean, we've been living this way for 12 years now, married for 17, together for 18. We've been making videos about this lifestyle for almost 10 years, about a decade. Decade worth of video experience.
Good decade, long decade.
And this is our first attempt at a podcast. So I hope you guys will enjoy it.
Totes.
Because we're going to enjoy it. It also gives us the ability to sit down and just talk to each other for an hour a week. You're not giving me any direction on where I should stand or if I should do the teapot pose.
Always do the teapot.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Is. Well, and we're not just talking to people that are viewing.
Yeah, because we've done tons of live streams, but never like nobody's ever gotten to see how we interact with each other.
Or hear how we
or
interact.
Even hear it.
Yeah.
So so this is kind of new.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to pretend like you guys aren't even there.
I hope that is a lovely thing.
We'll see. We'll see.
Sugar in
this. Yeah, this is kind of like the pilot.
It is. Yeah. It is. Only the good thing is that even if the pilot is horrible, no one's lost, you know, there wasn't big funding to be like, cast out.
Yeah, well, sort of like our live streams, we want to leave the audience with a distinct feeling of meh.
Guaranteed.
You know, so as long as we've done that, we haven't made anything worse.
Exactly.
And I think I'm going to have a little coffee with my sugar today. So where should we start?
Well, there's the how we met, but then there's actually a lot that...
Start before that.
Well, there's a lot that went into how we happened to cross paths.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like page 21.
There you go.
Of our story.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's start on the preface or the how did you grow up?
Oh, wow. We're going way back.
I mean, like a quick, like just so that...
I know.
You know.
I grew up in Arizona for a little bit and enjoyed the outdoors, a lot of undeveloped land around us. So you're hearing bread if you're not watching this, the lovely sourdough chocolate bread being cut. I ended up in Southern California and I was homeschooled. And as a result of that, I graduated with my associate's degree when I was 19 years old. Or I'm sorry, I graduated, thank you, with my associate's degree when I was in high school, and then got my bachelor's degree at 19, traveled the world, and it was in that traveling that led to us crossing paths.
Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So you were homeschooled.
I was.
Yeah. Were you like the type of homeschooled kid that was like, I don't ever want to do anything do any work or anything like that?
I was.
What kind of homeschool kid were you?
I was a self-motivated, self-starter, get it done, work hard first so that I could play forever. Literally, my philosophy was if I get my work done as early in the day as possible, I could play the rest of the day and key point, not have to stop playing. So that is, you know, that was essentially why and just that mentality that moved me to wanting to kind of get things done, even at college, more rapidly, because I knew that I didn't want to do school for 4 more years after high school. That just seemed laborious and terrible.
Yeah.
So, but 2, I could totally do after high school, having already did my first 2 years of college concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. There was no one pushing me to do it, making me to do it. I just had my own sort of drive.
Nice.
I don't know.
How did it work out exactly with the, like, high school and college at the same time? Were you taking college classes that gave you high school credits, or how did that work?
Yeah, I was for any class that I enrolled in that were, like, you know, basic criteria of math, history, you know, English, those I got to double those credits for high school units. At that time, they've since changed it, but at that time, if you were enrolled in a college, which this was a junior college, while you were in high school, your schooling was 100% free. You mm-hmm. bought your books, but, and maybe there were lab fees for materials, mm-hmm. but the units themselves were totally free, so my first 2 years were completely, completely free.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, because I know this and we're on the subject of junior high school, how long did you hold the college, like, record for pole vaulting?
That's so funny because I did hold the record. We looked at it. I don't know. I think for like 15 years or something. It was only within the last, I want to say, 5 or so years.
Yeah, that,
like,
somebody beat
tops, it. That somebody beat it.
Yeah. And would that have gotten you into the Guinness Book of World Records?
You know what? I don't know. I was very, very, I didn't share my age with people because I didn't want to be scrutinized. I didn't want to be treated differently. So my teachers that did, you know, ask directly how old I was, I tell them. And one of these guys that I did tell, he was like, "You're 17? Oh my gosh, how many units?" You know, I was taking a crazy amount of units. But it's possible that there was some record at that time for the age that I was. I just didn't, you know, I didn't really broadcast it. Perhaps if I knew somebody in the, you know, like, news writing.
Now we broadcast everything.
Broadcast everything.
Except your age. That's something
that's
that
we, totally, yeah,
I mean, thing. That's just etiquette.
It is.
You know.
Yeah.
I will just say, because a lot of people wonder if we're even part of the same species, you are 2 years younger than me. Time has just been significantly more, we'll say, harsh on me, you know? And so that's how that went down.
That's how that went down.
Yeah. Now, when you went to college, and I'm kind of fascinated by this whole subject, and something I like to brag about, about you,
mm-hmm.
like it's a co-brag. So when you finished up with community college, you had your associates, you graduated high school. Did you throw 2 hats up at the same time or just one?
That's funny.
You went on to a California State University, mm-hmm. right? So you transferred into a state university. And what did you study?
My big field of interest, and had been since I was a kid, was film production. And I enrolled in their film production program, which, interesting story, right? So I get my associate's degree, and I go to get into the film class at the university that I'm now able to be in as a transferring student. And the film production class that I needed was full. Mm-hmm. And he was not, like, there was a waiting list of like 30 people. So I was like, well, I can't not, you know, have this course. So I went ahead and looked at what the community college offered in their film and broadcasting area, units that I could transfer mm-hmm. and still have it be applied towards, you know, some of my major requirements. When I came back the next year, I had to apply to get into the program because they just changed it. So oh, wow. There was a whole nother step that I had to put a portfolio together and this kind of stuff. And of course I was, we know how it ended, but I did get into the program and I went to that same teacher, same class, which was again full because it was first available to current students
yeah.
who were juniors. And I said, do you remember me? You know, try to get in. He was like, I do. And he added me right then.
Wow.
Assuming other people would drop, but he was like, you just keep coming to class and I'm sure people will drop.
Nice.
So it was a bit of a, you know, thing to just get into that program, and I made it in, and it was really quite the experience.
Nice. There's one anecdote that I'd like to ask you about. So at one point throughout this entire experience, you hear about this other person who's, were they your age, who is carrying a certain amount of credits?
Yeah. I overheard two of my friends' parents talking. And they were saying, yeah, so-and-so is taking, I don't remember what it was, like 9 units. It was taking 9 units. And they were both like, wow, that's amazing. And literally that comment is kind of what spurred on, well, I could do more than that. Easy. So I went ahead and took 12. And then I take 6 units in the summer, and the most I took was, or attempted, was 24 units, and I did complete 20, I think it was 21 units.
Wow. Well, go-getter.
Go-getter. Go-getter. Yep.
You go through the rest of your college years, and then you do an internship. So where'd you intern? Like, what was that whole thing?
I worked on a senior project. And they were very impressed with my work ethic. I'd been on film sets growing up from, you know, when I was like 12.
Oh, yeah. How many movies have you been in?
I lost count.
Yeah. We always like watch movies and we're like, hey, there's mom.
I don't know, 100 or more TV shows. There was a point where they kept having to reset the camera because the actors kept moving where they were at when they would go to do a second take and so on of those shots. So I just put tape on the ground like you would on a film set, which avoids and alleviates that issue, as well as just being really hard and you know, getting things done very quickly that needed to be done. So from that senior project I worked on, made a friend, and she worked with, she worked with Warner Brothers, but she ended up recommending me for an internship at Sony on their scoring stage, where I got to go a couple times a week in between my class schedule for a semester. It was awesome.
Yeah?
It was so cool.
What were some of the things you got to be around?
I was there when they recorded the music for Envy, for Terminator 3. Also worked on the ADR stage and ran into Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was pretty funny.
Yeah. Get in the chopper.
Oh, man.
Come with me if you want to live.
Intimidating look. I was walking out of the studio while he was walking in, and I was almost ran into him. Let's see, Rolf Kent, who was a fun guy, composed a lot of stuff. I ended up meeting a sound engineer that I worked for after that as well. David Newman was the composer and then worked for his sound engineer for a little while, which was super, super fun. And then ran into, what was the guy's name? It was
It's so funny that this name doesn't just come to
Martin
you.
Martin Scorsese. I'm in the scoring stage having a conversation with this guy. You know, we talked for like an hour. And I didn't realize, I didn't know who he was until about 3 weeks later. I'm watching a documentary in my film class. I see him on there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I totally was talking to that guy. And, you know, and my friends were appalled. I didn't know who he was, of course. Fair enough, but I liked the behind the scenes and working on it, and was terrible with names unless they were an actor. Just terrible.
That's why everybody's six shooter or turbo to me. That's one of the things that we're similar in. I can't remember people's names.
I do a lot better now, only because I don't know. Now I'm like, that's important.
Yeah.
I want to know this person and their accomplishments. So.
Yeah, awesome. So so you graduated, you traveled all over the place after spending, 3 weeks in New Zealand after you graduated as like a graduation present?
Yep.
Skydived a couple of times, once on each island, right?
Yep.
And then, let's see, what else do I remember? This is like a dating
That's
game
quiz.
Test. Yeah.
What else did I do?
So, okay. So let's get to the meat of the thing. We've always had this kind of inside joke about, the two inside jokes. The first one is that you've had your arm up the shirt of basically every major celebrity that has been in the last, 20 years. Not so much in the last decade. We've been in the middle of the woods. Yeah. But why, what's that all about? And should I be like, should I feel some type of way?
Oh, 100% you should.
Yeah. Should I let it? speak to my insecurities. Inquiring minds want to know.
Inquiring minds.
Not just me, I promise.
Well, you know, I'll tell you.
So good, by the way.
I've yet to try it. I've been talking.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try it.
Well.
But, see, the difference between these celebrities who my arm has been up the shirt of and you is, you love me. They tolerated me.
Yeah, your existence and your need for their
working relationship
for their labs, and it's kind of funny.
Got to be very professional.
It ties into what's going on right now. So this is you're hooking them up with their lav mics, right? Mm-hmm. And you did like press junkets,
yes,
and where like an actor or a director or something would be on stage, and 50 different news outlets would come and ask them the same question over and over again, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they would book out hotel rooms so they could really control the lighting. And it was, very like,
but that was essentially
exactly.
A junket is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Promotion for a movie that they're about to release.
And so you're hooking up lav mics, and so you get Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
You're in a... On stage with Brad Pitt.
Okay, Brad Pitt was, we were in Palm Springs for that one at this amazing house.
Yeah. And,
so I go to mic him up, and he takes the mic from me, and he goes, oh, I got it. And he clips it right onto the outside, and, at the time, everything's wired.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, I know my bosses are going to walk straight up to him, take the mic, and fix it themselves, and blame me for it. So I'm like a little bit stressed looking at this, and he notices, and he goes, this is really bothering you, isn't it? And I'm like, well, it looks sloppy.
Yeah.
He goes, all right, you can fix it. So then I put it through the shirt, through the buttons, so it looks nice. But
yeah.
He was funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
One thing that I find funny about this is that, now we make internet videos. And we have wireless lavs and really good boom mics and all the different stuff, right? And I just insist on wearing the mic receiver with a little dead cat on it in my top pocket of my overalls.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I know it just drives you crazy. Every time you watch
it. It drives me crazy right now.
Yeah.
That, I'm like, I think my hair's covering mine. Yes, I do. I hate it. But
makes you crazy.
You know?
It's what I'm here for. Someday, you're not going to feel that way about the microphone.
I will never not feel that way about the microphone.
Okay. All right. I feel you.
Funny. But you know what? It's easy for me because I just go, here you go. And you're all.
It's true. So. Really, I just wanted to take work away from you. I know how busy you are all the time. Taking care of the kids and making amazing sourdough bread, which you should go ahead and
I'm
try.
I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
You try. Right, right here. It's very amazing. What do you think? Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
It's like an 8.6 out of 10. Yeah. 8.6, 8.7, you know, which is a solid score. Solid score.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if I added sugar or not.
I don't know, but it's very chocolate chippy.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah. It's good. It's very good. So what do you want to know about me now that you have a mouthful of sourdough bread? I mean, we know that you're like this crazy overachiever with like, I'm painting a picture here. I'm painting a picture. And I think we're going to, by the end of this, leave people with more questions than answers. And that's how I like it.
That is really funny.
Yeah. So we started with how you grew up. Should we start there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So how, where, when?
Those are all great
questions. Where did you grow up?
Yeah. Thank you for thinking about that. Like? So I don't know where to start on this video or like on this story, not the video. I think there were like specific things that happened leading up to all of this that I'll just kind of gloss over. So when I was born, before I was born, no, when I was born, on my birth certificate, the father was named David Carlos Rivas. As you can tell, probably not biologically connected. Okay? He was a 5'5" Oaxacan. who my mom was essentially married to for the arrangement of everything. And that's all I'm going to say, right? We're just going to leave it there. Fast forward a bunch. He was great. He took care of me. He was kind of like the housewife. And my mom worked all the time. And at about 5.5, 6 years old, he tells me to go get in the car. I'm like, sure. Get my stuff that I needed. Go jump in the car. And then we just start driving, and we're driving for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And I'm like, what the heck is going on?
And you were how old?
I was like 5.5, 6 years old, wow. About the same age as the twins right now. So we get to this house right on the border in San Diego between Mexico and the U.S. And I'm like, so what's up? You know, what are we doing here? He walks me in, he introduces me to his mother, his sister, and, you know, all the other people that were living there. And they brought me a bowl of cow blood soup. And I was like, I'm not eating this. And they're like, no, it's so good. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. And I was like, you know, over the shoulder. So we're there for like 3 or 4 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, David sits me down in front of this keyboard. Playing the piano keyboard, put some headphones on me, and I'm playing the keyboard. And then I hear, boom, the front door get kicked in, and it's my mom, who's also like 5'3", but she's a big lady. And she's probably one of the most frightening human beings, like when you enrage her, that I've ever met in my entire life. But she went full on mama bear, and she kicked this door down, comes over and grabs me, rips the headphones off me, and like, basically picks me up by my shoulder and walks me outside, puts me in her van. She had this like, you know, early 70s champagne pink colored van. And it had like Rose of the West airbrushed on the side of it. I mean, it was like, it was straight out of a like Smokey and the Bandit movie, right? Bed in the back and, you know, this like had the like little circular window in the back there. We get home. Turns out I was being kidnapped, but he loved me. He was going back to Mexico now that the thing had ended, and he just wanted, because he had basically raised me that whole time, right? And so I'm like, all right, sort of confused, starting off life in sort of a confusion. Wait, you mean I'm not half Oaxacan? You know, and for those of you that can't see me, I'm 6'3", 250 pounds, and damn near transparent, like my overall, you know, complexional vibe, right? I got this blonde hair, probably statistically improbable that I'm Oaxacan, right? So, so anyway, he just wanted to take me with him. Like, that's what happened. So a few years go by, and really just actually it was like 1 year now that I think about it. We're driving down the road in this old van, and I'm sitting in back, and we're driving down this kind of back road that's right next to a highway, and we drive by this motorcycle. It looks like it's broken down on the side of the road. And then about a mile down the road, there's this gigantic dude in blue jeans, black boots, leather jacket, cowboy hat, whole nine yards. I can see my mom get like visibly like, you know, and she pulls over to this guy. He turns around and she goes, "Larry, get in." And I'm like, "Who's this guy?" Right? He gets in. They don't say a word to each other, but we go back to the house, and my mom puts me in my room, turns on the TV, and is like, "Don't come out." Okay. And, you know, I'm like 6 and a half, 7 years old now, mm-hmm. right? All of a sudden, this guy's just living there. And I'm like, what the heck is this all about? And about 6 months or so go by, and we're going into a Best, right? It was like this big, kind of like big box store at mm-hmm. one point. And we're doing the 1, 2, 3 jump thing. I got both of their hands. 1, 2, 3 jump. 1, 2, 3 jump. I look up at my mom and I ask her, "Can I call Larry dad?" And she goes, "Larry is your dad." And I was like, okay. Right? I'm like, all right. That period was pretty tumultuous, right? The next like 3 years.
And that first 6 months, was that nice? Was that like
it was good, yeah,
that was pleasant?
Actually, that was the period of time where I developed my storytelling ability by listening to my dad. My dad was an amazing storyteller. I mean, he would like just come up full of crap, like totally full of crap, but he'd come up with these stories. Like, we were out camping one time, and I saw these eyes off in the distance. He goes, "Oh, that's a raccoon." And I was like, "Why are their eyes glowing?" It's because one of the raccoon's favorite food is flashlights. And so they'd go and they'd eat a flashlight. And, you know, so that, you know, sometimes when they swallow, the flashlight turns on, their eyes are going to glow at night. You ask him any questions about it, he just smoothly come up with the answer for it. It was crazy. I would watch him with his friends and he'd be telling a story and I would go like, "Oh, that's how you capture someone's attention. That's how you, you know, keep somebody's, you know, interest in what you're talking about for a longer period of time or whatever." Right. And so that was really nice. But, I remember on my 8th birthday is when it started getting crazy. He was an alcoholic, drug addict, biker, did all kinds of stuff. Super abusive to my mom. Mm-hmm. Never really did anything to me as far as whoopings. In fact, you know, my mom would be like, "Hey, here's a spanking, Larry, get the belt." He'd be like, "Go get the belt, boy." And so I'd go and get the belt. And he's like, "I'm taking you in the other room." And then he'd like put the belt together and then snap it. "You ever gonna talk to your mom like that ever again?" You know, he just like couldn't bring himself to spank me or to hit me or anything else like that. He was also gigantic. He was like 6'8", 300 pounds of just like what I've described so far, right? Mm-hmm. He was just a freaking giant. My mom's this like little tiny thing height-wise, you know, mm-hmm. she's a big lady. But she's actually recently lost like 100 pounds. Wow. So yeah, doing natural food stuff. And anyway, it was intense. And then so there's a whole bunch of whoopings throughout that time for my mom. In one year we moved 16 different times to get away from him, and he would either find us or, you know, he'd get in contact with my mom. And so that was rough.
Were there how old were you through that period of time?
That was after my 8th birthday. Yeah. So from 8 to 9, Cody was just born. I'm 8 years older than Cody. And I'm 9 years older than Ethan. So, yeah. So then it was pretty crazy. And then during one particular whooping where my dad had my mom over the hearth of the fireplace, trying to shove her head into the fireplace. That's when I decided I had had enough. And so I jumped up behind him. My grandparents had enrolled me in martial arts, as the present for my 8th birthday. So I took a stance and I front kicked him as hard as I possibly could in the nether region, which, in hindsight was probably strategically a good idea. Not so like when you're that size of a man and you've got this tiny little 9-year-old, it's a nuisance at best. So he goes, wham, he swings back to hit me. And it was like in slow motion. He wasn't trying to hit me. He was trying to like toss me away. But I remember flying over the table in the front room and flying over the table and landing perfectly on the sectional couch behind it. And just, but when that happened, something changed with him. It was like maybe 3 weeks before my 10th birthday that this happened. Something changed. And a few days after my 10th birthday, he died. He had a massive aneurysm, stroke in the hospital. Stroke first, it vegetized him. I remember going to see him and they wouldn't let me in. And once they finally did, because I started fighting one of the orderlies because I was pretty ornery at that point. And he's like, you're a 10-year-old kid. And I was like, I'll whoop your ass. Like, I don't know. When I watched Ricky Bobby and the kids were like, I'm all hopped up on Mountain Dew. And the reason why I cracked up so much is that's exactly how I was when I was that age. So anyway, they finally let me in to see him, and he's got all these tubes and everything hanging out of him. And it was the first time I'd ever seen him like weak, and vulnerable. And all I could think to say was, hey, Dad, how you doing? Right. And he couldn't answer me. He was completely a vegetable. He never would have recovered, And on February 1st, 1991, he died. And that was right after my birthday. And so then it became very strange, right? So I grew up, my mom, she's always been a hard worker. She took on, her day job, which she was the lunch lady at our school, which was awesome because I always got cookies and all my friends got cookies. I was quite popular as a result of this because of the cookie bribes that you could get from my mom. But then she also started being a karaoke host. So she started a little karaoke hosting business. And I think at that time she was maybe 4 or 5 nights a week. And then she got a paper route in the morning. So I would help her with the paper route most nights until this one night I was in the back of the truck throwing newspapers. My mom had been working like nonstop for days at that point. And, she took a corner a little too hot, and I tumbled out of the back of the truck and just going around this corner, boom, 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 wound up right about at the same place in the driveway of this house that where I would have been throwing the paper, And right. And so she stops. She's like, oh my God, are you okay? It was totally fine. It was like, I'm in martial arts. I learned how to roll, break fall. So anyway, I stopped doing the paper route with her as much. I do Sundays with her at that point, and not every other night. And so, but we had these two little kids, right? My two younger brothers. And when my dad passed away, they were 1 and 2. So I basically became the take care of the kids, for a while. We'd spend a lot of time at my grandparents, spend a lot of time with my aunt and uncles and all that stuff. My mom was always, basically working. And somewhere along there, at way earlier of an age than I should have, I developed a pretty significant drug habit. And I was never really into alcohol. I never saw my dad do drugs, but I saw him drink. I saw him brew corn mash whiskey and eat the corn mash like the guy was an animal. So I never really had a problem with drinking, but drugs, that was a whole different story. So, then that just began a downhill spiral. I barely graduated high school. And that was only because my aunt was the president of the school board, and it was a big school board. She was the president of it. She pulled some strings and helped me to do adult education and get credits for it so that I could graduate high school. I had absolutely not a care in the world for school. And I knew I was probably going to end up doing sales, because my grandpa would always tell me how sales made the world go around. A person in sales could make 10 times as much as a person who goes to college or you know, runs a machine shop or whatever. And I had an uncle who owned a cruise line who did that by being in sales, right? And so all these different influences were like, I don't need school. So I used it as a social thing and also to fund my habits, you know, because I could move things at school that I couldn't do if I wasn't at school. And that's how I was able to fund all of those things. I figure by like age 21, I'd probably put about a Ferrari up my nose.
Wow.
You know? So pretty significant. Right after that, I went to ITT Technical Institute because I was like trying to get myself together. And that was a mess. And then they went down for fraud. So it was all a big waste. But, you know, the Department of Education still won't, you know, get rid of that loan for ITT Tech, even though they like specifically went down for fraud. So that's still there. I'll make 32-cent payments on it until I'm 461 years old. And I'm okay with that. And then I found myself in this like terrible, horrible, abusive relationship. And I mean, like, you know, I grew up watching my mom get beat up. Like one time we walked out into the garage, right? And my dad was out there with another woman in the middle of doing what you would do in that case. And instead of stopping, he broke a 2x4 over my mom's head. Like, so when I was ever in a situation like that, I couldn't do anything. I just freeze up, right? Because it's like, I'm not going to do anything. I was with this one gal. It was a drug fueled mess of, you know, partying and doing other ridiculous things. And one day she just starts like swinging on me and punching me in the face and everything. And I grab up her arm so that at least I could stop that. And she freaking bites a big old chunk of my shoulder out. And I was like, okay, so that's enough. And I leave there and I go back to my mom's house because I was living with her. And I'd sat down and I was like, that's it. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write out exactly what I want out of a relationship. And then I am going to intentionally shun all other interest on the relationship front until two things happen. One, I meet the exact person that I have written down on this, you know, 16-page document that I had been writing. And two, gotten myself into a condition that wasn't so, like, when you think about it, I was like a beat up used car, right? It's only so marketable, right? Maybe you could trade it for like another beat up used car, you know? And that's kind of how I looked at, my value to a relationship. And I knew I needed to do some body work. I needed to have, you know, a full on tune up done. And so for the next 3 years, I just like pushed every woman that came my way or showed me any interest away. I was just like, nope. Because they weren't who I had described in my, like what I wanted. But I was also working on myself at the time, and I got cleaned up and I, you know, got myself to a point where, I'd been clean for a few years and like things were going great. And then I got this job being a door-to-door salesman, which we'll come back to in a minute, because now we're at like page 18. So there's some things that you got to fill in on your side. Mm-hmm. Right. So we covered what you were doing for work. There was a point. Are you super cold?
I'm fine though.
Are you sure? I'm cold. You can go get your jacket on.
I can get my jacket on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The soundstage is a little drafty. which we can work on for future podcasts, but yeah. So, okay. So we know what you were doing for work, press junkets and that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Doing audio engineering and the whole nine yards. Where were you before we met? Like where geographically?
Geographically.
Yeah. What, there was a job that we often joke about.
Yeah. There was a film festival happening in Canada, in Toronto. And my boyfriend at the time was Canadian and had family in Canada. So we worked out with the junket company that we worked with, you know, if we could go and stay with his family so they didn't have to pay any additional, like, hotel fees or anything. They were like, yeah, absolutely. So we were in Canada doing a bunch of different junkets for movies and stuff that were there. And you know, here's your favorite story of, yeah, of all of these.
But don't say the line, but tell the what happened.
Well, anyway, we're walking down in sort of the middle of all of the, you know, the festivities of this film stuff, and then we're walking down and Luis Guzman is walking past us. So and then my boyfriend at the time was like, this is James.
Is like a huge fan, right?
Yeah, bigger than I knew he was a fan of him.
Yeah. Did he like convulse or anything like that? He was shaking.
No, but afterwards it was definitely like,
yeah, like glowing a little
like
bit.
Oh, totally. Totally.
You got a little, yeah, glowy.
I mean, Luis Guzman, he's cool.
Yeah.
But it was really funny.
Super cool guy.
Yeah.
Super cool guy. As an aside, now anytime we see Luis Guzman in a TV show, movie, anything like that, in unison, we will say, oh my God, I love everything you've ever done. But it's a cheap shot. It's a cheap shot. But it's okay. Many years ago. But for 18 solid years, every time we've ever seen anything with Luis Guzman in it. Oh my God, I love everything you've ever done.
Thanks, man. And kept walking.
Okay. So you're up in Canada. You're finishing up this, like...
Yeah, we were there for, I think, a week or so. I might have been there for two. I don't remember. While we were... while we were out, I had a friend that I'd known for a while, and he was having a birthday, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll totally be there. But then I was in Canada, and I knew this was happening and was a confliction, and then I just felt really bad that I didn't say I wasn't going to be there.
Yeah.
So when I came back, I was like, hey, I'm really sorry I didn't, like, let you know I couldn't be there. I was in Canada. I mean, but I said, well, let me make it up to you, and we'll hang out and celebrate your birthday. And it was that, all of that, that leads up to our Jason and I's first encounter.
Well, there's more on the other side of the story before,
right,
we get to that. But so you set up a time to go and meet up with your friend. And had you ever been to his house before?
No, it was a mutual. Actually, I didn't even know the friend that he wanted to hang out with.
Yeah.
He was just like, yeah, let's meet at my friend's house. He's in Ventura. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's far. I never went to Ventura except for with my parents to go to the pier. Like, hey, let's go for a drive. That was where the drive would generally end up. We'd walk around on the pier. We'd get some food and we'd go back home. Everything I did was always in the valley or like...
Or Alaya.
That was always more work. Or I did have friends that lived down there that I'd hang out with. Yep. It was always going further south. So
you're like,
say,
never in this place. Never go to this
never
place.
Never been. Friend I'd never met. And so anyway, I drive my friend, whose name ironically was also Jason, to meet up with this friend where we can hang out. And
was there anything specific that stood out to you about your friend Jason?
You just love this.
I do. I love this part of the story.
Okay, so
not me, Jason.
No, yeah,
your friend Jason.
I know. Well,
yeah, yeah.
So not you in the third person.
Not me in the third person. I know we talk about me like that a lot, you know. But no, You got?
I'm not talking you in the third person.
I always imagined
you could talk about yourself in the third person.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's
agree
how it
to disagree.
Hey,
agree to
Mama
disagree.
Mama loves you, right? I could say that's in the third person. If I say Daddy loves you, well, that's not third person because I'm talking about me. Grammar's fun.
You can,
anyway.
You know, it's faux pas to talk about yourself in the third person, which would imply there is an appropriate way to talk about yourself or to talk about someone else in the third person.
Well, then
which is why it's faux pas.
I should probably just make sure I fully understand.
Agree to disagree.
The definition of, because now.
Yeah.
Now you're just making me wonder if I actually know what the word means.
Mm.
Typical.
Yeah.
So anyway, this guy, Jason, he was an interesting guy. Yeah. He had some sort of genetic, like from birth disease of some kind. He was like able to function, but he definitely, you know, I just thought it was nice to, you know, be a friend to him.
And this makes me sound terrible because I just asked you if there's this one particular thing that stood out about him, which is
none of
what you just said was not what I was what I was talking about. I won't cut those, but yeah.
No, he was super into bull riding and Metallica.
Yeah.
Those were his two favorite things, and it didn't matter who he was talking to or how many times we hung out. Those were the only two things he would, like, find interest in. So I guess when, so I think that's what those two things.
So the events leading up to the day that we met, those are for you. So you got guilt tripped into going and visiting someone in a city that you don't like going to, but you went.
Yeah.
To a friend's of a friend's house.
It was my own guilt trip, though.
It was you were the guilt.
I was.
You were the guilty party.
The guilty party. Yeah. Making myself feel more guilty.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. It's all coming together for me.
That's good, because I'm getting a really clear picture here, too.
See, it's good. I think we're sorting through some things. So for me, that day started with, you know, a pep talk at the old door-to-door sales company that I was at. And gave me a pep talk. I gave the people below me a pep talk and I went for it. And I was assigned to this this one particular apartment complex, which I had done amazingly well at in the past. And when I got there, they had built a fence all the way around it, like with the electric gate and all that stuff. It was a new thing when I got there. So I was like, well, I'm Mr. Persistence. So a fence isn't going to stop me from doing what I came here to do, right?
Certainly.
It wasn't something I learned. This is ingrained. This is ingrained in me as a small child. Yeah, I'm gonna just keep going, bang my head against it. So I wait for someone to go through the gate, and I do my best, you know, like Spy Kids impression, and like and get through the gate, and I start knocking on doors. And after like 2 hours, nothing, like nobody was even biting at all. In fact, I knocked on this one guy's door and he like came out yelling and screaming and swinging stuff at me. I think he had like, I don't know what he had in his hand, but it wasn't like a, I don't know. It was like a cheese board or something like, you know what I mean? Like something kind of almost like that you'd hang on a wall, but he's like swinging it at me. And I'm like, whoa, guy, hey, I'll leave. I'm sorry. Yeah. He was attacking me with his largest charcuterie board. Yeah. And so I'm like, man, I keep walking, knocking a few more doors. And then all of a sudden I see this, like I'm a potato shaped guy, right? Like if you were to take a standard russet potato and then put two popsicles in the bottom of it for legs, like that could be, if you squinted your eyes a little bit, you'd be like,
is that you?
Is that you, Jason? Like that, you know? Like, especially if it was set to where, you know, but this police officer that was there, like if you just took that concept to the absurd, I mean, he was like this gigantic pumpkin shaped individual, right? Or like a gourd. You know those gourds, they dry out and make musical instruments out of? Mm-hmm. With all the seed, or the, not seeds, but the shells around the outside. Mm-hmm. Like you take one of those and then make his legs toothpicks. That was more how you describe this gentleman, right? And the guy with the charcuterie board comes out and he's like, that guy over there. And so the guy like looks at me and he's like, come on over. I'm like, I'm from the streets, bud. Like, you don't know me. Right? And so I'm just like, gone.
Take off running.
I take off running. Like, you don't know this, but I'm 50% Oaxacan, right? I'll get up over that fence like nobody's business. So I take off. I had to jump over the fence because there wasn't any cars coming. Like full on, you know, that Jackie Chan movie where he like jumps from one to the next. I imagine in my mind that's what it looked like, but it's probably
all the potato glory.
Yeah, it's probably not what it looked like. You know, it probably looked more like a scene from The Blob, like like slow motion, sort of like momentum just carried my lower half of my body over this thing. So anyway, I get in my car and I'm just like, sheesh. Well, I guess persistence wasn't enough today, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go to this other place that I know of in Ventura. This is in a whole different city. And so I hightail it over there. I imagine the police officer was faced with going over the fence and was like, I guess that's it. You know,
I did my job.
I was supposed to do. And then he walked back out because he didn't follow me. I was gone. And I went to Ventura and I started knocking on this other door. And you know, it wasn't great. But at least I was getting some interest and having, you know, talking to people and everything. And then I come out from around this corridor into this kind of courtyard. And there was like, you know, two-story apartments there. And there's like a big courtyard. I couldn't remember if it was where the pool was or if it was just like a little park there or something. But I look up. And I see the most beautiful, blonde, like, glowing human being that I'd ever seen. I had to sit there and just kind of, like, stare at you for a second because when the doves were released from behind you and the angels started singing and there was, like, a full choir, and it was like a Pentecostal choir, right? Like, oh, Lord, you know? Like, answer to your prayers, right? It was like one of those kind of
moments. Were you like, she better match up on my list?
Yeah, right. At this point, I'd forgotten all about that, right? I had just like, it was just like, nope. I have an idea of who I want to be with, and until I meet that person, that's it. But there was, so I'm like thinking to myself, man, I'm rusty talking to the women's. Haven't shown any interest in anyone but I'm a salesman, right? And so I'm like, I can figure this out. I'm going to wing it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wing it. I'm not going to overthink it. In fact, I'm going to significantly underthink it, right? I'm not going to think at all. I'm just going to walk up and whatever the first thing that comes out of my mouth is going to be the best thing. It's going to be the right words, and it's going to bring you closer to me or her, right? And so I start walking up and I'm like, do you know where apartment 247 is? It's like the only thing that could come out of my mouth at the time. And to which you said?
Oh, I was like, I don't know. I don't live here. And it was funny because you looked so like deflated. I remember I was
like, this could have been my chance at happiness.
So you start to walk away and it's like, I can feel this happening.
Tension.
And I'm like, well, you know, what are you selling? What do you have there? And it was, what do you have there? Something like that. And
So you called me back. You felt it too.
I mean,
you knew.
There were no doves. There was just, you know.
This is like a two kids on a swing set.
Yeah, that and some Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, right? So I walk back over and I knock on the door. You open it up and I promptly get an earful about the Bull Rider's Prayer as I'm trying to talk to you, and your friend Jason will not stop talking about moving to Montana and becoming a bull rider, and he was reciting the Bull Rider's Prayer and showing it to me on the back of his t-shirt, and all I wanted to do was talk to you, right? So anyway, how was that for you, right? Like, I'm obviously like, now I'm like, yeah, I want to get your number. I want to talk to you again in the future when this rodeo guy isn't here.
You know what's funny is when you walked up, and I was still sitting on the, you know, it was like a balcony, but on ground level balcony. Uh-huh. And like, I remember, you know, you were like sweaty. I remember thinking for like a flash moment, what would it be like to be with a guy that looks like this? Because you were tall. Like my previous boyfriend, and there weren't a lot, was just a little taller than me. Mm-hmm. So he was a short guy for a guy, in my opinion. Brown, really curly hair. So then this tall, you weren't very potato shaped then.
Well, you keep me fed pretty well now. So, you know.
Well, that's debatable sometimes.
depends on what's been happening that time.
Well, it's funny, thank you. But yeah, no, and you know, I was looking over like a questionnaire type thing, and I think I was looking over that while he was talking to you, so I was fully distracted.
Yeah.
And not paying attention at all. Yeah. I don't even recall that was. I don't doubt it, because that sounds absolutely exactly what was happening. Mm-hmm. I was like looking at the thing that you were peddling, as it were.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Because I know you're wondering. I got her number. Okay.
But I would like to say though.
How about them apples like that?
I wasn't like, here's my number.
Yeah, it wasn't like that.
It was like, oh, I'm really interested in this, and I would like to know more. Here is my contact information on this form that you are handing out to me.
Oh, hush.
That's from my side.
No, you were in love.
He was in love.
So I call, or we call, set up a time for you to to meet up.
Yeah, I was with your associates. And
what happened?
Well, I had to cancel like twice.
Like four times?
No, it was twice.
Or seven?
No.
What was the first time?
Well, the first time I was just really tired. Mm-hmm. And I was cleaning houses with my mom at the time. And I was like, I don't feel like driving to Ventura.
She's playing hard to get.
And then the second time, I didn't realize it was conflicting with a dentist appointment where I had four wisdom teeth pulled.
Yeah.
And was, you know, helping, having painkillers that they prescribed because it was very painful.
Hard to get.
Yeah, so that time I called and I was like, I can't come in. I'll come next week.
Yeah.
And then by that point, I think...
It was a running joke at that point.
About me or in general?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what is it?
We were just joking, be like, because we had to set appointments for, you know, people that we'd want to get onto our team as door-to-door salespeople. And we'd be in a meeting, and somebody would be like, well, Carrie's coming in next week, right?
Oh, my gosh, I never heard this.
Yeah, it was like a running joke for us.
Yeah.
That's why I know it was more than twice.
Did you go back to your office and were like, I just met the woman I'm going to marry. Mm-hmm. Is that why it was such a joke?
I kept it to myself, actually. I remember keeping it to myself because I didn't want to appear unprofessional. And I had devised this whole plot, you know, of how I was going to get other people's...
I bet that it felt like an eternity.
It was an eternity.
So, anyway. But it was twice. I remember.
Anyway, let's fast forward a little bit. You come in, we're chit-chatting. I come to you and I ask you, can I take you out to dinner?
Coffee. Right?
Or coffee. Mm-hmm. Take you out for coffee. Hey. So, I ask you out for coffee. And you're like, sure. This is how I remember it.
Okay.
All right.
Tell me what you remember.
That was basically it.
Oh.
Sure. Right?
Yeah. And I, one of the other people that worked there, was like, you know, she led me to think that you were going to ask me out. So I was kind of like, had my guard up a little bit. Yeah. And I was like, oh no, here we go. Might have to let him down gently.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, well, coffee sounds fine. Mm-hmm. So sure. Because, you know, I want to be nice and not rude or anything.
Yeah.
And we also had been hanging out and, you know, having conversations there. You know, because I was like there, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we like texted, like T9 texting, like an investment, right? Like an investment in time.
Not funny, but this whole time before that, I was like.
It was professional.
It was just fun to hang out.
Like, yeah.
We were there at the office anyway, but for me, it wasn't, I just didn't like.
Yeah.
Wasn't interesting.
At some point throughout this like part, was that when you and your former boyfriend broke up? Was it before that, before the dentist or after the dentist?
No, it was, it was shortly after Canada. I was already broken up with him, like pretty close. When I was out with my friends. Mm. Yeah. When we first met.
Gotcha.
I think, I don't know.
Okay. So, So you're like, we're on our way to a Denny's to get coffee because it was like midnight and there was nothing else open. What are you thinking to yourself?
I don't recall having any thoughts. Were you in the car with me or did we meet there? I can't remember.
I think we met there, okay. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't recall any thoughts, actually.
All right.
Brad, how about you?
How I'm going to say it, how I'm going to be like, you know, am I going to pull like the full Picard line, you know, am I going to go Shakespeare? What am I going to do here? I'm going to shoot my shot, right? So what am I going to say? And then we sit down and what happened there? Like when we sat down and started talking?
Well, you just flat out asked me.
Yeah.
Hey, so I really want to create a relationship with you. It was more eloquent, but essentially...
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm not really wanting to, like, I'm not really interested in having any kind of relationship right now. Yeah, just not right now.
And I was just like, no problem. I totally understand.
And you were like, oh, that's fine. Oh, no big deal.
And then what happened?
Well, then, you know, he was just so sweet and charming. And we just kept talking and laughing. And then I just, somewhere in the middle of that, about, you know, an hour or two later, I was like, thinking to myself, I love this guy. I'm gonna marry this guy.
We fell in love at a Denny's. At like 2 o'clock in the morning at that point. Do you remember this?
Coffee.
You remember, I was like, oh my gosh, your hands are so small. Mm-hmm. And I put my hand up.
Chocolate on it.
And then you put your hand up and I was just like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, look at that. I can close my hands back, right?
My hand.
What happened? Mm-hmm. What happened as a result of that? You're just like, oh my God. Good Lord, I have the vapor. I was choked on some bread. But you were just like, oh my gosh.
Oh, it was very exciting.
Yeah. How long was it until we were engaged after that?
Wasn't it like, I mean... Wasn't it like 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Like unofficially?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And do you remember how I asked you to marry me?
Well, there were two.
Mm-hmm.
There was the, I guess, unofficial. I was thinking about going.
Like the engagement one.
Oh, okay. Because I actually like the other one. Mm-hmm. This one is much more romantic, though. You drove me up to the top of a hill.
And well, first.
And busted out a ring.
I showed you all of the places I had lived.
Oh, yeah.
And like. Gave you all this background on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went up to that, like, lookout point that mm-hmm. overlooked, had the beautiful view of all of the city, the beach, the mm-hmm. pier.
And I'd never been there before.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Christmas Eve?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And so, yeah. And then a year later, we were going to a Christmas party. That was going to have like 9 ministers there.
Yep.
Right? So what'd you do?
I just remember being like, hey, we should get married tonight.
And I was like, all right.
was that?
That was that. We were at a Christmas party. I dropped the ring two or three times. I couldn't get my words out. Like, have you, before or since, ever seen me at such a loss for words? No. Or unable to communicate? I was so happy. So, so we tie the knot. We go to have our little 1.5 day honeymoon, you know, at a really nice hotel. Mm-hmm. And so a couple years later, I found that book that I put that mm-hmm. paper in. You know, it was actually, I think it was 16 or 18 pages of just like, it was actually about 5 years later, of everything I wanted out of a relationship. And it was an exact description of you. Like down to, you know, your intelligence and how you do things and your motivation for doing various things and everything else. It was like exactly you.
Yeah. I remember you saying, I think it was something like, here, read this. And I was reading it and I'm like, what am I reading? Like, what is this about me? Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, no, I wrote this, you know, however many years ago.
3 years before I met you.
Yeah. I was like.
And see, at that point, I was surprised that you had any memories from prior to that. Like, I
just want to know what I was say sure, about you.
I was pretty sure that I willed you into existence. And I'm like, maybe I just did a really good job and gave you a whole backstory. But I wouldn't have ever thought of that backstory. That's how I know you're real. That's how I know.
Well, good on you. That's the way you know you didn't create me from thin air.
Yeah. Which I'm not going to lie, makes me love you even more.
Ooh. Thank you.
You're welcome. So,
really interesting how different, like, I mean, just how drastically opposite mm-hmm. our upbringings were.
Yeah.
From yours. As just a quick aside, my parents are like the sweetest people, and that's like very supportive, you know, give me free will to choose and have experiences and this sort of thing. But that, all of that, we have found ourselves not only crossing paths, but together for so very long.
Yeah, 18 years. We'll be married for 18 years in November, together for 19. Yeah.
That's
crazy, right?
It's very crazy.
Opposites attract. And what I've noticed is, like, we have similar values. Like, the things that we value are the same. But we are almost the exact opposite in every other way, like mm-hmm. every way that matters. And I think it's really interesting because even when we go hang out with other people that are like married couples, I'm like, I could never be in that relationship.
And I always say the same thing.
Yeah.
We'll have the same.
And you look at them and you kind of like squint your eyes a little bit. You're like, you kind of look like you're related. Like, like you seem like you were raised by the same people, right? There's something to be said for the whole opposites attract thing, you know?
Yeah, it's.
Oh, the kids are playing. That's pretty cute that they're playing, what's it called?
Musical
chairs. But there's two of them playing and they're playing with two chairs. There's always going to be a winner. But they're arguing over who that always is.
One of them has a stick and is chasing him. He's like dodging.
So, I mean, that unlikely story resulted in 5 beautiful children, at least more than half of them that Lycan can tolerate me. I think it's been a good life.
I think it's still just starting.
I think so, too. We got a lot. There's a lot left.
There's so much left.
There's a lot left.
You know, the boys being 6, it's the oldest we've ever had of our youngest children.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But for people at home, if you could distill all of the, like, because originally the question was, like, how did we meet? And how do I find someone who will go off into the woods and live an off-grid living and homesteading lifestyle mm-hmm. With me? How would you distill that down into, like, a couple of bits of advice for people?
Hmm.
I would personally, my first one would be like, become a door-to-door salesperson. You're going to meet so many folks, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea how to answer that question, except I know in our situation, as far as opposites, have been very, I think, beneficial for us.
Yeah, that's been helpful.
You know, and here's the funny thing I just have to say about this is, because that is the case, right? I really enjoy you, of course, but I enjoy people that have strong opinions and strong viewpoints, because honestly, I don't really care. I don't really think, you know, it doesn't, like, and that is part of how I'm just opposite. And I think it is probably one of the top two reasons.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more for sure that we get along fine. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the friends that I have who also are strongly opinionated or have stronger viewpoints, oh man, I could not have my friends and you in the room together. Mm-hmm. Not even just because of you, but them.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh man. Okay.
Which is totally okay with me.
You know, you've from past experience, you the people we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. They live
I almost had to fight one of their husbands. Because of the thing that you just described. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
It's okay. They're divorced now. Yeah, so we can mention that. I feel okay mentioning it.
But, yeah, I think that's, like, a really big thing. I have an insane amount of patience, and I can be wrong. I don't always enjoy it. And I'm usually the first to apologize.
Is that really the truth that you experience? Is that really?
Yeah.
You really think that's the truth? I can count. Maybe it's just the way you word it. Maybe. But I can count, like, on two fingers the number of times you've apologized to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's funny, because those are two less fingers that I can count if you apologize.
I apologize all the time. I'm the fastest to apologize, always.
Okay, remind me of the last time.
Like 2 days ago?
What was it?
When you got mad at me and it was my fault.
I don't remember.
And so I was like, I'm sorry. I apologize. The emotional upset that you're experiencing right now is totally my fault and not due to your irrationality. It was an apology.
I have no idea.
I'm just kidding. That's not
Uh-oh.
What happened.
Uh-oh.
Let's just agree right here that neither of us is very good at apologizing.
Oh, okay. All right.
You want to have that? I'll give you that.
I'll shake on that.
Thank you. What?
Get some meat on that.
Yeah, you want? Love her.
No, not like strong arm.
I love you so much.
But a nice, warm, snuggly, fuzzly.
Oh, like this?
Yes.
Okay. So,
Yes, I'll agree to disagree.
Well, that's how we came together. That's all you have to do to find a mate who will move off into the middle of the woods and live off-grid with you. And for many of those years, not have any of the conveniences or comforts, you know, for the few years that we didn't have any of those things. Like, that's how you do it. That's how you go about it. That's the whole story, start to finish.
That's the whole story.
Yeah.
The whole story. And, you know, I think that the other thing is that, you know, when you have a good person and their intentions are good and the way that they, like, treat you is good, as far as it not ever being, you know, in a physically abusive way or in a, like, in a word, like, you know, can't hurt you. But, you know, like, we don't name call each other.
Yeah.
And those are, I think, huge, because anything else can really be navigated.
Yeah.
You know?
We hardly ever even fight.
Yeah.
Like you'll get upset with me and I'll just be like, whatever, and walk away.
I did say that.
Yeah. happened right before we started this podcast, in fact.
Yeah, because I didn't know where the tripod was.
No, it was a selfie stick. Yeah. But, you know, we work our way through it and, you know, in our own way. I'll stew about things and you'll just completely, like, not. but I'll like stew about it for a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if I'm really upset, but then it's over and you'll like come and make a joke or like smile at me, or you'll bring me chocolate chip sourdough bread
and
that
I'll
you
say,
made from scratch.
I forgive you.
And you will. You do, Merit. You're so good at that.
So are you.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's a good place to end off on our first podcast ever. What do you think?
That was very fun.
It's kind of like a pilot.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it does and see what people's feedback is on it before we decide whether or not we're going to go full ham on it.
I like it.
Figured that would be a fun story to tell while we're drinking some coffee, eating some fresh bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Is it good?
It's just so good. In fact, as soon as we're done with this, I'm just going to go dive into it.
Mm-hmm.
So if this, you know, gets a positive feedback, we'll hear from you again next week, I think.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, we may just do it because I had a lot of fun.
I did have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it's something you're listening to or watching, thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah.
Got a lot more sort of insight on our background and how our paths crossed as a result of all of that leading up to that.
Yep, totally true. So anyhow, I love you. That was fun. Yep. So we'll see you next week. I don't know what to do with my hands right now. Yeah.
I should probably stop that to make sure.
We'll see you later, guys. Groove it to the stories from the young to the old. Where the roots and the music flow. Come on down to our homestead. We got stories, we got bread, yeah. Seven kin and tales to sow. Stead talks where the good vibes grow. Listen to us, oh, we've got a rhythm we're playing. All you city folks, tune in. Barefoot jams on the wooden floor. Family band, we've got the funk galore. Turn up the bass, let the spirit soar. Living it up at Stead Talk, so who could ask for more? In the heart of the land, with the kin you adore. Stead Talk's vibing, it's the funk at the core.